this is, I guess, why I love my job. And it's not always easy, but it is a job of learning. It is also a job of being moved by the genuinity of people and the struggles of people, and yeah, how to hold hands and make at least hopefully a part of the world a better place.
Hello and welcome to Revolutionary Woman. My name is Tess Silverman. Women around the world are constantly creating ways to make a difference in their communities, and today's guest is no exception. Charlotte Cameron is a teacher in social work and a researcher at the Amsterdam University of Applied Sciences. She is committed to fostering inclusive learning environments in which students and teachers can share diverse perspectives and engage in critical reflection. While she recognizes that a fully just society may be unattainable, she believes that education and communities that amplify multiple voices can create hope and meaningful opportunities. In her teaching, Charlotte addresses themes such as urban inequality and solidarity. Previously, she spent 5 years as project manager of the SESI Community Center, an intersectional platform for student engagement where students took the lead in developing programs that claimed institutional space for underexposed topics. Hi, Charlotte. Welcome to Revolutionary Woman. How are you this morning? Or actually, it's afternoon by you.
It is afternoon, indeed. It is 4 at this moment, 4 p.m., and oh, wow. It's almost getting dark already. Since a couple of days here in Amsterdam, where I'm based, it's snowy. Mm. And there's a lot of snow, and this has been couple of years since it has been so snowy, so this is kind of exciting.
Really?
And it's beautiful. I'm having a beautiful view at the moment, and I'm doing fine. I'm very happy to be on this podcast. So thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for stopping by and being a part of my show. Okay, so let's get started. So you grew up in the south of the Netherlands. Can you tell me what it was like for you growing up in the Netherlands?
Definitely. I grew up in a provincial city that has about 250,000 inhabitants. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but in the Netherlands, we don't have huge cities. So this is already the sixth or the seventh biggest city in the country. It's a very small country where I'm from. Uh-huh. And growing up was, for me, very different within my family situation and outside of it, because I would say that I grew up in a very safe, warm, loving family situation with parents that are still together and a younger brother and younger sister. Mm-hmm. And it was good at home. I feel rather privileged when I think about that. I could do many hobbies. I was a creative child. I loved to play the piano and to draw and mm-hmm. to write poems. So all these kind of things, I love to do. Mm-hmm. The neighborhood where I grew up was very white and quite privileged. Mm. And it was not a place where I particularly felt home, I need to say. Even though everything was there, everything was available, uh-huh. I felt that there was a lot of competition and exclusion taking place, a lot of focus on the material sides of life. And I was, and I think I still am, pretty sensitive human. Mm-hmm. I was a sensitive child. I was very dreamy. I was often spaced out. So I would say that my childhood growing up there was, on the one side, creative. I could do many things, but it was also lonely because it was hard for me to connect to others.
Okay.
Yeah, so I guess that's what it was about.
Okay. So I read that the first time you saw a homeless person, it affected you deeply. How so?
Yeah, that is true. There's at least one memory that I remember very vividly. And this was when I was walking with my mother through the city center. I think I was about 7 years old. Mm-hmm. And I saw a person passing by, and I was so shocked. This person looked so unhealthy, so skinny and pale. And I couldn't even see what the gender of the person was, and not because of gender fluidity, but just because I couldn't see what was the matter with this person. And then I was shocked, and even more so because my mother started to talk with this person.
Hmm.
And I didn't know what to do. I thought, okay, what is this? What is happening here? And then it turned out that this person was my mother's cousin.
Oh wow!
And she was addicted to drugs. I believe heroin at the time. So my mother told me, okay, this is my cousin and she lives on the streets and she's addicted to drugs, so don't ever take drugs.
Wow.
And I was so shocked. And this is a very vivid memory, but also there have been more encounters with homeless people asking for money. And I felt so shocked that people actually have to live on the streets and that it makes no sense. And I remember as a child having this mixed emotions of feeling extremely sorry for the people, but also a little scared, a little bit intimidated. So it was really these mixed emotions that made me very upset. And really that they stayed with me.
Oh my goodness. Well, I could only imagine, being that young and then finding out that this person was actually related to you, to your mom. I can understand why it would make an indelible mark on you. So you were also a youth ranger for World Wildlife Fund and collected money for extinct animals. And at the age of 10, you won a writing contest about children's rights. First of all, how old were you when you collected money for World Wildlife Fund?
I think that was around the same age, maybe 8 or 9.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yes, I was pretty young and I was crazy about animals and always laying in my bed with encyclopedias about animals and learning all about them, but also very much affected and moved by the idea that animals were extinct, but also that children were living in poverty. And these kind of things, I think emotion regulation has always been a thing in my life. But I do remember moments, on the one hand, collecting money. This was something that I loved to do and I found it exciting. And I was there to speak up for animals, for other children, but also laying in my bed in tears and being pretty upset. And overwhelmed by the inequality and the injustice.
Wow. So were your parents as concerned about the same issues you were, because you were so passionate about environmental and social justice even back then?
True, yeah. I'm thinking about it right now. I do believe that I had an upbringing in which caring for others and others with less privileged circumstances was really a thing. So I do think that my parents really gave me this awareness, let's say, for sure. I cannot say that my parents are very activists. And it's funny, when I met my very first friend when I went to university, when I got to know him and his family, I found out he's really from an activist family, and his parents would go to demonstrations, and that was very impressive to me. My parents are not like that. But I do think the values are absolutely coming from them, for sure.
Okay. So you are a teacher at Amsterdam University of Applied Sciences at the Social Work Department. But I read that you never intended to be a teacher. So what drew you to teaching?
Yeah, good question. I studied anthropology and urban geography. And I have always been interested in how people live together and why they do what they do, and in culture, and also in people that live in a different way than me, and how the city works. I was absolutely mesmerized when I was 14 and we went to Paris for the first time, and thought, okay, this is what interests me. And so these were my study backgrounds. And then why I got into teaching is simply because I started to work for the research institute of our university. It's a research institute on societal topics, and I was working for urban social work. And this is closely related to some study programs for students. And then naturally, I started to be involved with those. And then I became a teacher.
Okay, so on one of your other roles was as a project manager for SESI, which stands for Student Engagement Social Impact. Can you tell me more about SESI and what prompted you to be involved with them?
Yeah, gladly. This is something, this is a project or a part of a university that I've been involved with for 5 years until quite recently. And yeah, it has made such an impact on me. So I'm very happy to talk about that. SESI Community Center, that's the full name. It is founded by a couple of very active, I would say very brave students and teachers who found that the university is a space with a lot of dominant narratives and where other narratives, other perspectives didn't have a lot of space. And they found that there's a very particular example, which I find always worth mentioning, is that I believe in 2015, there were the attacks on Charlie Hebdo. I don't know if you remember. And these were cartoonists drawing quite, critical is not the word, but satirical drawings of prophets. And yeah, then there were attacks in Paris. And this was obviously, the attacks were horrible. And what they noticed then in our school has a very, very diverse student population. It really reflects the population of Amsterdam. And there are many students of color. There are many students with a Muslim background. There are all sorts of students. What was apparently noticeable, that it seemed that the Muslim students were kind of, they weren't held accountable for these events, but it was expected that they would speak up about them, that they would speak out against them. And that was an awkward situation and a painful situation, because they obviously found the attacks as problematic as all the others, but somehow, because the way they lived, the way they look, they were expected to speak out against them. And then, yeah, those teachers and students said, okay, this is problematic. This should be a space where everyone has equal space to express themselves, and not to no one should be pushed or forced to justify any societal events that they don't have any connection to. So then they started to organize events, very low thresholds, small scale, just outside of teaching hours, in spaces in the building, just to talk about everything that is unspoken, everything that is, any perspective that is unheard in the university, that is not evident. And this developed into SESI Community Center, with a very nice external subsidy from the Ministry of Education. Yeah, and to, I would say, a very important platform for students to speak up, to organize events about things that matter to them, that they think are underrepresented, often with a a decolonial character. So, and yeah, this, I think this is very, very important and very inspiring. And then at one point I attended one of the events, and this was an event on the intersection between religion and gender, and gender diversity and sexual diversity. And I very, very much enjoyed that event, because I thought the speakers were so brave. Things were being shared. There was a safe space for people to speak and to hear each other. So I thought this was such a beautiful space that they created. And then the project manager of the time, she came to me and she said, oh, how nice to see you here. She was a colleague teacher. She is a colleague teacher. And what did you think of it? And then I said a bit jokingly, like, okay, this was the most beautiful evening of my life. I'm so, so inspired by this. And then, yeah, a couple of weeks or months, I don't remember, after, she said, okay, I am going to take a step back from SESI Community Center, and I would love you to take up my role. So that was great.
That's amazing. And how long were you a part of SESI?
That was for 5 years, exactly for 5 years. Yeah, so I did that next to my teaching, part-time project managing and part-time teaching.
So what has surprised you as an educator and project manager for SESI with regards to youth involvement in social justice issues? Has that increased?
I absolutely think it has increased.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that, yeah, let's say the generation of teachers, even though, of course, we are not one generation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm myself 37. I'm working for about 12 years in the University of Applied Sciences. There is teachers from all ages, all generations, of course. But I do think that it is really the time for us as teachers to reflect on what youth involvement is, what mm-hmm. it can look like,
mm-hmm.
what are topics that young people want to learn about, and what are the things that they actually know a lot more about than we do.
Right.
That's really what I notice. And every year I'm involved in a program. It's a nice program. It's called Tune In,
mm-hmm.
and it is for first generation students, students who don't have any family, any relatives that went to higher education, so mm-hmm. for whom it is completely new, they can sign up to this program. And then it is right before the start of the academic year, and we offer to them some workshops, some information sessions, everything to give them, we say, a soft landing
mm-hmm.
in the university. And what I always notice when I meet these people, they are 16, 17, 18, 19, I notice how caring they are to each other, how many things that we could maybe think they would be taboos are completely fine for them to discuss concerning mental health, concerning gender diversity, concerning racism. They have their own language to speak up. They are brave enough to speak up in a group of people that they haven't met before yet, and they are there just to support each other.
Wow.
And I find that beautiful and really inspiring and something to learn as a teacher. Like, okay, I am a teacher in social work, and mm-hmm. I believe that students have a lot to learn, but let's make sure that we meet them where they are.
Yeah.
Because they are creating this society, and often in a very conscious way.
Right.
So that is something that I find remarkable, yes.
And it's wonderful to hear, because they are the future. You know, they're the ones who have to keep doing what they're doing when we're gone, you know. So I would think that they would want a society that is built on so much more diversity, so much more equality, and all of that that we've been, you know, we've been fighting for so long and still do. It's been so hard, but it is inspiring to hear that, you know, if from your point of view in a different country, because I don't know what's going on in different countries until I speak with someone from their perspective. Mm-hmm. So it's really amazing that that's happening in the Netherlands. So what has been challenging for you as an educator?
I believe there is a fire in those young people, and there is passion and there is engagement in their world and their communities. And sometimes I wonder what is best way of learning together. And this is a very, very broad answer, but I am noticing that attention span is rather short. Focus is sometimes difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to blame my students. I want to teach them something, but I also want to understand what is for them an appropriate way of learning,
mm-hmm.
and that fits them and that fits this society. I think that is really a challenge that I'm looking at, and it's also related to how to deal with theory, how to deal with writing, with mm-hmm. expressing themselves. And also, of course, different students are different in their talents,
right.
in their competences. So how can we create an environment that does justice to all these different individuals that chose a subject to become someone who takes responsibility
mm-hmm.
For their communities, for people in need?
Right.
So this is something that I think is a challenge that everyone is facing at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Mm-hmm. I also noticed, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic is long behind us, luckily.
Yeah.
But yesterday, because of the snow,
mm-hmm.
people couldn't come here in Amsterdam. And then we had an online lecture again. And it was so hard to really connect to students through a screen. That I find that really challenging.
Mm.
And Yeah, so I guess this is a challenge, how to really find connection and learn from there.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is also a big challenge. As I told you before, our students are very diverse.
Mm-hmm.
Color, in religion, in socioeconomic backgrounds, in gender also, even though there's many young women choosing for social work, but still there's a lot of diversity. And when we look at the teachers, there's a lot less diversity represented. So many teachers are white from middle class backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And this means that students do not automatically feel like this is their space because they don't have role models. They feel like this is a white dominated space with dominant stories that are being listened to. So how to create inclusivity here? That is really what I find a challenge. And of course, this is not something that is only an individual challenge. This is really something that we are looking at in the whole institution. How to deal with this?
Right. Huh. Okay. I can understand why, especially like mm-hmm. you said, if they don't see someone who looks like them or thinks like them, how can they relate? So that is exactly. Interesting. So who would you credit for where you are now?
That is a good question. I definitely like to credit the person who gave me the trust to take over her role at SESI. I find that great also because this is a woman of color wearing a hijab with very, very valuable opinions
mm-hmm.
who shares, in my opinion, something very unique. And yeah, she is insanely important teacher in our school.
Mm-hmm.
Myself, I am a white woman, and I do believe that we share many values. And I also believe that she looked beyond the identity in that way. And so I absolutely want to credit her. I started my job at the school in a research team that was very passionate, very, very energetic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a beautiful kickstart there. That was great too. And there have been so many interesting people on the way. And let me absolutely not forget the students.
Mm.
I feel blessed to work with these young individuals in a very important time in their life who are willing to open up with me, to share their stories, to share their vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
I would absolutely credit them for having me as their mm-hmm. teacher, and also to be who they are, because this is, I guess, why I love my job. And it's not always easy, but it is a job of learning. It is also a job of being moved mm-hmm. by the genuinity of people and the struggles of people, and how to hold hands and make at least hopefully a part of the world a better place.
Mm. I love that. So Charlotte, what's next for you?
So I work since many years at this school, and sometimes I think like, oh, maybe it'd be time to see where else mm-hmm. I could develop myself or learn more. But always when I ask myself that question, the answer is no. Because, it is true that I'm not very much familiar with other work contexts, but I still feel that this school and this institution is a place where there is so much to learn, where there is such an interesting dynamic of students, of people who want to develop themselves, of colleagues with different perspectives that I can learn from and learn with.
Mm-hmm.
Still feel like this is a very good place for me that suits my the way that I would like to see myself as contributing to society,
mm-hmm.
At least when it comes to a professional way. And what I really, really like to do, what I do since a while, is that I work together with colleagues from other faculties, and we have a platform that focuses on whatever needs to be addressed, whatever happens in the world that impacts people here too. And we organize events. It's a bit similar in a way to SESI, but then it's more an initiative of colleagues and sometimes students join as well. Mm-hmm. And for instance, we have organized last December the Vigil for Humanity. Mm-hmm. And this is a place where we gave space to, together reflect on today's world and stand still thinking about all those victims of a war, of genocide, of exploitation. Mm-hmm. And basically a moment of holding each other's hands in a world that is so difficult that sometimes we don't know even know where to start. Would say that, and I found that even though the institution is not always that easy to express yourself in, and sometimes we are disappointed by how the board addresses sensitive, difficult topics. Mm-hmm. I do this a place with like-minded people, and it's good to find each other and to collectively take action. So that is something that I would love to continue doing for sure.
Wonderful. If anyone wanted to know more about you and your work, how would someone go about it?
I do need to admit to you that I'm not big on social media as an individual. Somehow I always say this, my social media muscle didn't develop somehow. But I can absolutely recommend Stacey's Instagram page. Mm-hmm. It's at Stacey Community Center. And it's, I think, a very interesting Instagram page also for people who cannot come physically to the events that Stacey's organizing. Mm-hmm. Who want to know more about intersectionality, about student engagement. So that is an important one. And then also Havia, HVA. Four, as in the number four, Palestine, has a very active Instagram page that I want to give all the credits for to an amazing colleague who is very brave in sharing information and creating space. So this is also something that I would really recommend following.
Is there anything you would like to say to my listeners?
I would like to say that I think everyone is feeling in one way or the other that there is huge problems happening at this moment, but also structurally. There is so much that we don't know about, so much injustice, so much problems that are too big to even understand. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, creating communities, being in communities, mm-hmm. and I'm doing this in my school, in my institution, but also in my neighborhood where I'm living. We have a beautiful community where we are creating space just to be together, that are low threshold, that are trying to prevent that people are becoming isolated. Mm-hmm. For me, this is one of the most powerful things we have at this point in this world. And this gives me a lot of, a sense of meaning, a sense of togetherness, of belonging, mm-hmm. And also of hope, mm-hmm. Because it's not that easy to keep hope.
Right.
These
days. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, for sure. So being together with either like-minded people or just people, because we are living together in the end and we're getting to know each other's stories, mm-hmm. that has been very, very powerful, and that kept me going. So this is what I would love to share.
Thank you. If you had one thing to change that you wish you had done years ago, would there be one?
For me, personally, mm-hmm. I love writing, mm-hmm. and I wish that I would feel brave enough to share more of my writing, because I get positive feedback, but I just wish that I would have had the courage to share what was on my mind, in my heart, because I do feel it possibly inspires people. This mm-hmm. is something. Mm-hmm. And also, especially the last years, I have reflected a lot more on my own privilege and the lack of it at other people. So I think I would have stepped up more for those people being homeless, those people being in need in public space, on the streets, or in my school. And maybe I should have started with that or I would have addressed it even in a more proactive way.
My last question is, if you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
I find it a very beautiful question. I would try to, I don't know how, but get all that insecurity out of myself and understand that a certain sense of autonomy, of trust in myself, confidence would have brought me so much more already back then. Because I, when I'm, now that we started the conversation and I was thinking about that activism that I picked up as a child, those are very, very good memories and memories that I think like, okay, there I was close to myself and I wish that I would have done more of those. Contrary, I also spent a lot of time being insecure, wanting to be like others, hoping that others would notice me, that I wouldn't go unnoticed. This is something that for a long time I struggled with, this autonomy that, and I think this is a very universal topic that you are the way you are, right? And I do see I think to see that with my students that they have often more this sense of autonomy than I used to have, but I wish I spent less time worrying about others and more following my ambitions and my dreams. I think that would have brought me a lot more, but on the other hand, it's not too late for that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, thank you for that. Well, Charlotte, thank you so much for coming on my show and for sharing your stories and your life and work with Ceci, with me. It's really interesting because, like I said before, I would never have known anything about Ceci until I spoke with you. And, you know, youth involvement is not that it's lacking here. But obviously, it's not, you know, not in the States. There's a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of demonstrations and protests and everything. And I love that. But again, I wouldn't have known how that type of, I guess, that platform exists in different countries if I hadn't spoken to someone who lives in a different country. So thank you for that.
It's very nice to share. Very happy to do that. Ceci was really inspired by student involvement at UCLA. So there is inspiration going always, all directions.
That's amazing. Oh, thank you for coming by and for sharing, you know, your work and your life with me. And I so appreciate it. And good luck with future projects. I hope that you get more involvement after this gets aired, because it's so necessary, especially with the world that we're in right now. But I do have hope. I do have hope that it's going to, it's, there's so much involvement out there. So, you know, I'm really hopeful about that. So, but thank you, and I hope to keep in touch, and with that, have a great day.
Thank you. I also hope to be in touch. Thank you so much.
Take it easy. That's our show for today. I've posted more information about Charlotte Cameron on RevWoman.com. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll tune in every other Thursday for another episode of Revolutionary Woman. You can listen to Revolutionary Woman on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just a little note, I've launched a Patreon account to support the show. All proceeds will go to producing and editing the episodes to give my poor husband a break from being my personal IT and production department. He wrote this. The address is patreon.com/revwoman.